Our gardening gurus return to answer your late season gardening questions. It's the time of year for black-eyed Susans, blue hydrangeas and sunflowers, green beans, zucchini, and if you're lucky, maybe even tomatoes. It's also the time of year when bugs and diseases and critters may be encroaching on your garden, leaving you to wonder why you even bother year after year. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on this sunny Super Thursday, the Garden Cavalry is here to save the day. Joining us, horticulturalist and director of the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, Bill Kalina, and master gardener and coordinator for Gardeners Growing Healthy Communities, Barbara Murphy. Are you relishing your glorious garden right now or throwing your hands up in frustration? Are you just thinking of preparing a garden bed for next season? Whatever your question, go ahead and ask. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. And from Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. If you're a gardener, today is your day. We have our two favorite gardening experts on the show to answer your planting, pruning, picking, and other garden-related questions. In the studio with me, Barbara Murphy. She is a master gardener and coordinator for Gardeners Growing Healthy Communities. And Bill Kalina, the executive director of the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens. As always, we want to hear from you. What questions do you have this August? Our phone number, this is for Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. We always welcome brief emails at talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet if you do that at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to both of you. We've been discussing how gardening season is also traffic season in Maine, but Bill came in. Thank you so much for doing that mid-coast commute on this day, and Barbara, you as well. Let's start with you, Barbara. What's coming in at the garden? What's good? Let's focus on the positive.
Oh, what's good? So beans and some of our early warm season crops. I don't have tomatoes yet, but I have seen other local tomatoes coming in. We're just beginning the heat of the season where everything, all the fruits, all the vegetables are awfully close to being harvested, if not currently being harvested right now.
Okay. And what about troubles? Are there any troubles this year?
Jennifer, we're going to go right out of positive then. Of course, there are troubles. The big one is it's beginning to be tomato hornworm season. So if you're growing peppers, tomatoes, eggplants, now's the time to be vigilant to catch those very long caterpillars when they're very small and haven't decimated those plants.
So right now is the time if you've I wouldn't say neglecting your garden, but if you haven't been going out every morning.
And it's even going to take a little more than that. To catch one of those very well camouflaged caterpillars, you need to look closely at tomatoes and peppers. And this is a great time to put a white or light covered ground cover underneath those plants because then you'll see the droppings and that will clue you into it's time.
Okay,
it's time to be vigilant.
We'll turn back to the positive with you, Bill. And what's coming in? What's beautiful right now at the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens?
Well, we're in our all the summer flowers, the summer perennials, annuals are beautiful. But I think the most amazing thing this year is that the butterflies are incredible, aren't they?
I was going to say the same thing. You just stole my thunder. My own garden. Go ahead.
And people ask why is it so great? I'm not a lepidopterist. I don't know exactly, but it's got to be a combination of the weather patterns and that sort of thing. But we haven't had a butterfly season like this since 2012. So 5 years ago, we had a crazy season like this where so many. I think part of it is that, you know, butterflies have several generations typically in a good year where they'll lay eggs and then those will hatch out and they build up populations. And I think the butterflies they got a head start this year for whatever reason. So we've had the monarchs around for about a month longer than normal. And it's just great.
Well, you know, that sort of confirms my own experience. In our garden, we don't have milkweed, but we have purple cone flowers and we have hyssop. And oh my goodness, do the monarch butterflies love those flowers. And a monarch butterfly on a purple cone flower is like something in an inspirational poster or something. It's so pretty. Oh my gosh. So it's not just my imagination. This is a good year for butterflies.
Yeah, definitely is. Mm-hmm.
I wonder why. Holy cow. That's so exciting. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. I'm going to go ahead and start asking some of the questions that you have because we have a little shorter window today because of Super Thursday. So we're going to go to Kelly on Facebook. She says, I have had a horrible time in general this year with my gardens. Something ate all my beautiful lilies that I planted over 10 years ago. and all my hosta and echinacea too, and my tulips. I believe I have voles. What can I do to get rid of them? I don't want the little buggers dead, and I don't want to use chemicals. I also notice I have more chipmunks this year. Any relation? And then she says she does feed birds as a backyard bird grower. She says, I'm so frustrated. I can't afford to replant everything.
The voles, yeah, they're very tough. And it sounds like all foods that the voles really like. And I don't have any magic bullet for getting rid of voles other than a cat. Or a cat
she
that
doesn't
likes
want
to
kill him.
You got to let the cat take care of it. You know, it's very difficult. Certainly, for the chipmunks, feeding the birds will build chipmunk populations too, because they feed on the seeds that drop down. But I mean, the only thing you can do for voles other than that is try to eliminate the cover where they like to hide. They love stone walls, wood piles, things like that, where they can get underneath. So if it's possible to, you know, clear away some of those hiding places that the chipmunks also hide in, that's about the only thing you can do.
You can catch a chipmunk in a half-a-heart trap, but you can't catch a vole in one, or can you?
I have never been successful catching one in a half-a-heart trap. I suppose it's possible that they would wander in accidentally or something, but the problem with voles, and we've talked about this before, that if a vole pair started having babies January 1st, and they breed all year long, and none of those babies died and bred, and there would be 200,000 voles at the end of 1 year. They're related to lemmings. You know, you heard about lemmings and how they just build populations. So they do that because so many things eat them. You know, so certainly the mink and the fishers and the foxes and coyotes and everything like to eat them. But
I read recently too that chipmunks breed twice a year with mm-hmm. 2 to 4. What would you call them?
Pups, I think.
Pups,
right?
Per yeah. litter, so that can grow pretty quickly as well. Barbara, it's early April. August. I've put some lettuce seedlings into my garden recently. I'm a little hesitant to put seeds in, but you probably would tell me to be brave and go ahead and plant, even though it's August, right?
I just planted beans last week.
See, I knew it.
And they're up. They're up. Everything's growing faster. It's warm. Go. Yes, Jennifer, go.
So if you've got a spot in your garden where something was unsuccessful, try beans. What else would you might try at this point?
I would try anything that is 55 days or less.
So just look on the back of the seed pack.
Sure. Why not?
55 days or less. Why not? Okay, here's a question from Lynn. An email. After 10 years of plentiful blooms, all of my iris, both bearded and Siberian, on three sides of the house were killed quite suddenly this spring by the iris borer. I read up on this pest, and the truth is that by the time I realized it, there were no good rhizomes left to save, treat, and replant. I think I'm giving up on iris for the present. But now I have this garden space that begs filling. I have plenty of lilies. Can you suggest some other perennial that would fit the same conditions? Some of the space is close to a spreading yew, which gave my poor deceased flowering crab a lot of trouble. We're in Bristol, so a more moderate climate than some in Maine. Bristol, not far from you, Bill. What would you recommend she replace her iris with?
I'm trying to think of things that kind of look like iris. There's bell commandas, which sort of have an iris-type leaf, but they have more of a, like a little lily flower. She could even try crocosmias, which are a little iffy, but with some mulch, we're often able to get those through the winter. They have the same kind of iris-like foliage, but bright colored flowers in the summertime.
All right. And this part of her email, a P.S., Barbara, on another note, I got a tip and a sample of an organic fungicide said to work on tomato blight. It's called Nova Green Companion. No sign of blight yet. Have you heard of that?
Never heard of the product, but I haven't seen any blight either yet this year. So it is a little early to be seeing significant amounts. You might be seeing a little yellowing up of the leaves. So hang on to that product. And remember that for most fungicides, you need to apply it before you see symptoms.
Okay. And when would someone start looking for tomato blight? Soon?
As the tomatoes are getting larger and more stressed because they're carrying more fruit, that's when I typically start seeing things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're going to take our first break a little bit early because it is Super Thursday. If you'd like to join this conversation, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page.
And welcome back. This is Scott Marshall, and I'm here with Brenda Guerin asking
Hi,
you for your support. Hi, Brenda.
How
it's
are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
1-800-866-1475. Listening to the amazing Maine Calling with Jen Rooks. One of your favorites, I know.
Oh, totally. Okay, let's talk about butterflies for a minute, shall we? I mean, the cone flowers and the whole idea of what we can do in our gardens to create this wonderful symbiotic environment between... I have the best garden this year I've had in a long, long time, thanks to, in part, to my friend Michael Zimmerman. But it is gorgeous, and I love hearing more about what we can be doing. And where else am I going to hear this wonderful news? At the middle of the day, just enjoying the time with Jen on the radio and enjoying being with you guys, too, at 800-866-1475. Are you a member? Have you been a member once before and you're not a member anymore? Now is such a perfect time to go to the telephone or go to mainepublic.org. A lot of folks really enjoy receiving Maine Public on their computers. I do at the office. I don't
Absolutely.
Know about you, but I constantly stream Maine Public all day while I'm working, and I enjoy the chance to listen to the programs I love while I'm doing the things I need to do. So, gosh.
And if you're on the app, if you're streaming Maine Public on your app or your iPhone or your Android, click on that. There's a donate button that will take you right to mainepublic.org.
So easy.
Calls Without Walls website. Secure. It's safe. And it's your way you can support public broadcasting in Maine. So do it today. Help us out.
Absolutely. I love these special days because it just gives me an opportunity to reconnect with the things that matter to me. Do you ever feel that way where all of a sudden you just wake up in the morning and you say, geez, I'm going to be grateful today for the things that really drive my world forward in a positive way. And public radio for me has always been one of those things. And when it's a Super Thursday, it's one of those moments where you sit down and I look at the table with volunteers that are here giving up their free time to help Maine Public.
Help the cause.
Receive the support from those of you out in the world enjoying this beautiful day. So 800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. Gosh, how much fun.
It's a lot of fun. And, you know, you're talking about every morning what my morning routine is. I wake up in the morning, I go downstairs, make some coffee, and I say, Alexa, please turn on 90.1. And
See?
Alexa is very smart, smarter than I am, and she turns
Alexa,
on 90.1.
Alexa, please order Brenda a diamond bracelet.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
That'll go right to Amazon,
exactly.
And that's probably you'll get that diamond bracelet.
Isn't it wonderful?
And my wife will have some questions for me that I'd have to answer to. And that's all of a sudden I'm making coffee, listening to Irwin, getting caught up on the news, BBC News, depending on how early I listen.
Yep.
That's what I rely on every single morning.
Oh, totally.
That's what our listeners rely on, Brenda. That's what you rely on. And if you're like me and like Brenda, call today with your support, 1-800-866-1475. Go online at mainepublic.org. Help this radio station do what we do best, and that's deliver journalism to you.
And you know, here we are, Super Thursday, 800-866-1475. We would be so grateful to be halfway to our goal by 2 o'clock this afternoon. This is a terrific program. Our goal is $200,000, 2,000 pledges, 575 new members. What's the most exciting number so far? We're doing so well with new members today. That's so exciting. And it's the story, don't you think, Scott, of what's happening with public radio. It's the listenership is getting younger, more diverse, and folks are really discovering so much about the programming that they like. Not everything's for everybody,
right.
But it's amazing how many people listen every day, listen different times of day, and really enjoy so much of what's available here.
And one of the things we've been doing, Brenda, and our listeners know this, is we've been expanding Maine Public Classical. We've been sharing all day some
totally.
Exciting news. If you're in the Mid-Coast area, 96.7. Now, right now, it is classic rock or hard metal rock, depending on what they're
also
playing.
Also music.
Also music. It will be very soon, Maine Public Classical, a whole new network from around Camden area all the way down into Freeport.
Part of the state that really loves Maine Classical. So glad to be, you know, the network has done such a great job of bringing the kind of programming people want.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that happens because of you. It happens because of folks that stand up for what they care about and what they believe in. And we do our very best to make that happen for you.
Donor support. That's how we're able to do what we do. Donor support.
One person at a time.
1-800-866-1475, mainpublic.org. Let me say that again. 1-800-866-1475, mainpublic.org. And thank you for your support.
And welcome back. This is Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today on the program, our gardening gurus with me in the studio, Bill Kalina, Executive Director of the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, and Barbara Murphy, Coordinator for Gardeners Growing Healthy Communities. The number for Maine Calling is 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We're going to go to Stu, who's calling from Tennant's Harbor. Hi, Stu. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm calling. I got a couple of questions for you. And they are, in fact, one, I have, I think the cabbage loopers, little green worms that raise cane with my cabbage. And I wonder if there's an ecologically sound thing that I could put on there and not harm the environment and get rid of them. Second question I have is I got about a 30 by 80 foot, very fertile piece of land, but it's wet, and I didn't get to plow it up until about 2 weeks ago. And I'm wondering if there's anything that I could put on there for somewhat of a commercial crop that would come to fruition in this short remainder of the season.
Well, let's take the easy one first, the cabbage loopers. They are the worst of the worst pests for all of those cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower crops. If you already have caterpillars on your plants, which is what it sounds like, BT products are probably the most gone to organic, relatively safe product to use. Do it as soon as you can when the caterpillars are on the small side. You'll have a better result. In the future, if you keep your cabbage and broccoli covered with a Rime or a row cover, the moth won't be able to land and you won't have that problem ever again. 30 feet by 80 feet on August 10th, a commercial crop. So
Tennant's Harbor.
I'm Tennant's Harbor, cold, warm.
Mid-coast.
So assuming you have a market, the market would be the first thing. You could do greens. You could do baby beets. You could do radishes, scallions, any of those. But I don't know what the demand is in Tennant's Harbor for any of the above.
Good luck, Stu. We'll move on to another harbor, Bar Harbor. And Rich. Hi, Rich. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. I was calling in response to one of the emails you read. Somebody had commented about chipmunks and voles getting into their garden. And one of the commentators on your show, I forget which, said, I think jokingly, to get a cat. And I just wanted to comment that for those of us that love to garden for birds, cats are actually a huge killer of birds and other small creatures. And they kill literally over a billion birds a year in the U.S. So just, I guess I would discourage people from getting cats as a solution to outdoor pets.
Right. If you have a cat, keep it indoors.
Yeah, Rich, I was just sort of tongue-in-cheek there because the reality is we actually tried once with to bring in cats to control voles in the nursery, and it was a dismal failure. So they're not great at
cat
controlling.
Chow is better.
They're not great at controlling voles. So, but definitely, I agree. They can kill lots and lots of birds.
And it's just that voles are just so hard.
Yeah.
Just such a problem. Rich, thanks for your call. We've got an email here from Megan. By far, this has been my most successful year for tomatoes. I have some gorgeous yet totally out-of-control tomato plants. There are many branches with tomatoes and some branches that are either just leaves or leaves with flowers. I'm afraid I missed the right window of time to prune them earlier this season. What can I do to control them and get them to a manageable size? Any advice you could offer would be terrific. Barbara?
Yeah, the out of control tomatoes. Because it has been a great tomato year. This constant once a week, twice a week rain that at least we've been getting in western Maine has produced beautiful plants. So, Jennifer, here's the pruning thing. I'm assuming it's an indeterminate huge plant. So when you go down and find the main stem of the tomato plant, and then there's going to be an intersection where stems come off of that. The leaf, the one you don't want to prune out, is going to be the lower one. And the one in between the stem and the lower one is a sucker. You can take off all of those, as many as you'd like, with the caveat, if they're really big as the stem, that's going to cause some stress on the plant. It's going to open up the plant where some extra sun might come through, causing sunburn. So maybe go at it a little bit at a time and judge accordingly. And if you do go through a dry period, this is the time to really hit your tomatoes with water.
Okay. And if you're earlier in the season or earlier, your plant is not as out of control, you can just pinch those suckers.
Exactly.
Right?
You would do it every week or so. Yep.
Okay. An email from Kale. Any advice for a first-time garlic grower? What is the best time to plant? Any tips on growing or particular types of garden to plant? Garlic. To plant.
Time to plant is late October, early November, somewhere in there, because we seem to be going longer and longer before our ground freezes. That planting date keeps getting moved up. What you want to do is get it in the ground, not mulch it, get the ground to freeze, and then let it just make it through the winter, having some roots established. Garlic varieties are all over the board. It's really a preference: sharp, soft neck, hard neck. Dave Fuller at the Cooperative Extension in Farmington is really knowledgeable about garlic, and I would encourage the emailer to contact him. Dave Fuller.
That's an interesting overall point you make, though, Barbara, that you're going to be able to plant things later in the season, especially things for next year. What have we seen? What is the change in the gardening window in the last, in your time as a master gardener?
Oh, we tend to have like a one light zippy kind of frost somewhere a little bit later, late September, early October versus early September. But then we tend to have a huge stretch where it's nice and still relatively moderate growing conditions, but the ground isn't freezing. So all of those root crops can just be kept in place, all those beets, all those carrots, leeks. They can all stay there because the ground isn't freezing and locking them in if you're trying to harvest.
How does the longer growing season affect the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, Bill?
Well, it makes for a beautiful fall is what it is. I mean, the growing season, according to the University of Maine's, extended like 2 weeks on either side, basically.
2 weeks.
Yeah. Because what they do is they're looking at old data about when the lilacs bloomed and when the first frost and that kind of thing. It's 2 weeks in the spring and 2 weeks in the fall, and that's pretty much throughout Maine. So it used to be that Columbus Day, everything was pretty much gone, but we don't really get a hard frost now until Halloween, typically.
And Memorial Day used to be, don't plant before Memorial Day, but more than just your peas are going in before Memorial Day sometimes, aren't they? I mean,
this year
was cold and chilly, but it still wasn't freezing.
No, and the ground was relatively soft and moving along. So, eventually the whole marketing paradigm is going to shift a little bit to acknowledge these extended seasons.
Okay, squeeze in one more question before the break. I have a 3-year-old strawberry bed that has produced well for the past 2 years. Every July, I diligently mow the plants back. I haven't gotten to it this year. And while the plants look a bit worn, they are healthy enough. I'll get motivated to mow it. But I was wondering why the strawberry plants need this. Wouldn't letting them grow and photosynthesize more develop stronger roots and stores of energy? This is from Anna in Auburn. And she says, P.S., I've taken several classes with Bill at Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, and he is an amazing teacher.
Strawberries are their own worst enemy. That's why you have to mow them back. The rows that you start out with would become the dreaded strawberry patch, which then crowd out the growth of good, ripe, sweet berries. So mow on, even though it doesn't make an intuitive sense.
Okay. Bill, what kind of classes are at Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens?
We have a wide variety of classes. Ranging from a lot of basic horticulture classes, things on botanical illustration. My wife right now is teaching a basic, the wild plants of Maine, more of a botanical course. We have, history courses. We really try to offer everything kind of plant related for a wide variety of tastes.
All right. This is Maine Calling. We do have our gardening gurus with us. If you want to ask them a question about your garden, give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'd love to have a quick email from you, a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, or you can post to our Facebook page. We're going to get back to Brenda and Scott in the Super Thursday studio conference room. What would we call where you are? Party locale. Hi, Barbara. I mean, hi, Brenda. Hi, Scott.
Hey, how are you? The show sounds great. I'm inspired to go out and make some gardening decisions for the late summer and early fall.
Mowed my strawberry patch, so I'm excited that that's actually going to help it.
See?
So something I did by mistake is going to make it stronger.
Isn't that cool?
Come to find out.
Absolutely. So the number is 800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. How much are you loving this program today and Maine Calling every single day? It's really a wonderful opportunity to connect with people in and around Maine, to listen to questions and comments from your neighbors and friends, and to learn about stuff you might not have time to pay attention to every single day. But here's the thing. Here we are. It's Super Thursday, an important day, an important goal, a real goal that
real
we
goal.
Need to meet. Our best intention is to get it done like we always do here in Maine by doing what we intend to do and paying attention to things that matter. And it's our goal to get halfway to where we need to be by 2 o'clock this afternoon, which by my lights looks like 29 minutes.
29 minutes.
And that's going to be an exciting opportunity if we can get, looks to me like we've got something like 200 pledges, 100 and maybe 150 pledges to go.
Left to go.
Between now and I am confident that if every person who has it in their head that, geez, I'm going to make that call sometime soon, if you did it right now at 800-866-1475, don't put it off. Do it while you're thinking about it or go to mainepublic.org. We could get there. And, you know, the thing is, Scott, it actually matters.
It does matter. 70% of our funding, Brenda, we've talked about this before, 70% of our funding comes from our listeners, comes from you, our listeners. So please call today, 1-800-866-1475. Go online at mainepublic.org. I wanted to mention, we've been talking about Maine Public Radio. I wanted to mention something that's coming up on Maine Public Television this fall, the Vietnam War.
Oh,
18
another Ken Burns
hours
series.
Of Ken Burns documentary.
Oh, so exciting.
Who else could tell the story of Vietnam but Ken Burns? And who else could devote 18 hours of television other than PBS?
Right.
That's the value of being a member. That's the value of Maine Public Television. Community screenings, 7 o'clock, Wednesday, August 16th at the Camden Opera House in Camden. Be there. A community screening and panel discussion. We have sold out in the Lincoln Theater in Damariscotta.
Wow.
Folks up there are going to be thrilled with the show. Thursday, August 24th, University of Southern Maine, Hannaford Hall, 7 p.m. We have tickets still available there. And Thursday, August 29th at Husson University's Gracie Theater in Bangor. There's a few tickets left.
What a great example of what makes public broadcasting different from other sources of media. When you think about the sort of engagement that we get the chance to enjoy, whether it's the Moth Radio Hour on the stage at State
Absolutely.
Theater, or whether it's all of the organizations that collaborate together with Maine Public to bring forward the great things that are going on here and throughout the state, whether it's things that are going on at the Common Ground Country Fair, or
right.
whether it's some of the fun programs that Corey runs to connect with our audience. There's so much great opportunity to collaborate and to enjoy being part of the public broadcasting family. And the way to start that conversation is at 800-866-1475, mainepublic.org. Easy to do and so important.
So very important. And where else but here with with people who support public broadcasting in Maine, could we have a conversation about Vietnam?
Exactly.
Such a divisive time in our country's history. My father spent a couple of tours in Vietnam, and it's something that we've talked about as a family. And where else could you discuss something so heavy, so important, though, that we should bring our children and our children's children, we should get them involved in this conversation so that doesn't happen again.
Sometimes it's easy to forget what a national treasure public broadcasting
Absolutely.
Has been, whether it's the work of Ken Burns, whether it's the work of so many individuals, whether it's Terry Gross, whether it's Susan Stamberg, whether it's so many that have really been hugely beneficial.
Or Tom Ashbrook,
or
who
Tom
was just
Ashbrook.
Here earlier,
Absolutely right.
late last week joining us on Point Live. So call with your support, 1-800-866-1475. Go online at mainepublic.org. Today we're listening, we're with Jen Rooks, listening about gardens and gardening. And why not call with your support today? 1-800-866-1475. Thank you very much for your support.
Indeed, thank you.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Answers to Your Gardening Questions. With me in the studio, Barbara Murphy, Coordinator for Gardeners Growing Healthy Communities, and Bill Kalina, Executive Director of the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens. We invite you to join the conversation. The phone number for Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We have a great email from Lisa. She says, I'm a gardener in Waldoboro and have also noticed that there seem to be more butterflies this year. I think I'm also seeing more honeybees. So encouraging. I also think I'm seeing fewer Japanese beetles since my traps are not filling up nearly as quickly as they have in years past. Are others seeing this trend?
I definitely think the Japanese beetles, we've talked on the show about the parasite that leaves the little white dot on the back of the Japanese beetle's head. I think it's having a big impact on them, plus the winters. It's interesting. I was just our CFO at the Botanical Gardens is a professional beekeeper, and she just got back from a conference that said that, you know, you've heard a lot about honeybee decline and that kind of thing. What they're finding is that the health of the plants that they're feeding on has a big impact on how healthy the bees are. So if you're growing like healthy organic plants that they're getting the nectar from, the bees are a lot healthier and they can fight off these problems that they're having in their systems. It kind of makes perfect sense, but, you know, you just don't think about that, the connection there between the health of the plants and the health of the bees.
My coworker, colleague Ed Morin says that he has a very healthy and happy plant of patch of oregano, and that the bees just love that. And I can only imagine what oregano bee honey tastes like. Yum. Here we have an email from Karen. I have strawberry plants in containers so I can start a patch at my new residence next spring. How can I keep them alive during the winter in containers?
Oh, that's a hard one. Boy, overwintering in containers. So ideally you would get them out of the containers and into the ground and let them freeze, or plant the container into the ground. The goal is just to get the plant to freeze and not to go through freeze-thaw. So by some sort of manipulation, I think that might be the best way. But it is going to be tricky. It's not an easy thing to do.
Can somebody put them in the freezer?
Not the freezer, but what you could try doing is, in November, is washing off all the soil and then just wrapping the roots in something like moss or something to keep them damp, but not the tops. And then just close a plastic bag around the roots, but leave the tops out and keep those in the refrigerator.
Yeah,
if she's got space, and then they should make it okay. But the key is don't put the whole thing in the bag because they'll mold up really badly. Leave the leaves out, but the roots wrapped in plastic and something damp, even paper towels or something like
okay.
that.
Okay, and Barbara, if this is a case where it's an email, so we don't know where she's building a house or knows her property, see if she can get there and plant them in November.
Yeah, boy, that's hard. Maybe because they're going to heave out. So I would go with Bill's. Bill's is the better solution by far.
Okay. All right. Our number, 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Bill, we haven't talked about how things are going this summer at the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens. Are you setting more attendance records again this summer?
Yeah, it's been another very busy summer, and certainly we've had record attendance this summer. It was a little bit of a slow start in the spring because of the weather, and we had to open late because of the construction we've got going on, but it's been great to see people there every day, you know, happy and enjoying the garden. So,
well, you've clearly filled a niche and a desire. People really want to see the beautiful gardens. Barbara, Bill mentioned the cold spring. We talked about that last time we were on the show. At this point in the season, is that sort of behind us, or are there implications for the rest of the season?
The biggest challenge might be, because it was a slow start, getting those winter squashes and pumpkins in on time and getting them growing and flowering fast enough so that they actually ripen off in time for either a Halloween festival or to get a large winter squash ripe enough so that it is flavorful. I know my own personal winter squash only came into blossom maybe 3 weeks ago, so I am running right up against it and may not make it.
Okay. Hopefully a long fall.
There you go. Long fall, right into Christmas. Right into Christmas.
An email. Hi, I purchased a home with a beautiful, lush wisteria. The previous homeowner said the plant is about 15 years old and it only blossomed flowers maybe twice in that time. I'm seeking guidance on how to increase blossoms.
It's really just with wisteria, they're legendary for taking a long time to mature. So often it takes 15 years for them to get to the point where they're mature enough to blossom, unless they were grown from cuttings, you know, if it's a seed-grown thing. So it may be just getting old enough. Like you might expect, it really just comes down to enough sunlight so that they can build up the resources to bloom. So I would say as long as it's growing in the full sun and it's getting adequate water and that sort of thing, it should bloom more and more as now it's getting mature.
If it doesn't have full sun, is there a chance it could that could be the issue?
Yeah.
If it's shaded and maybe taking out a tree or trimming up some limbs is going to make more of a difference than anything else?
Yeah, definitely. If it's shaded, that's typical for plants where they spend a couple of years building up the resources. It takes the flower, then they'll flower, then they'll take a couple of years off.
We'll go to Diana calling from Raymond. Hi, Diana. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm wondering about a fungus that comes on my daisies every year. It looks like white dust. And every year it happens, and I'm wondering if it can be prevented.
It sounds like you're getting mildew, Diana. Is it sort of coming when they're in flower or as they're going out of flower?
Oh, when they're in flower it happens. It's happening right now.
And is it the white daisies you're talking about? Or yeah.
I'm sorry. What
color of daisies are you talking about?
Oh, they're yellow.
The yellow daisies. There isn't too much you can do about that. That's just something that they're susceptible to. I think the best thing you can do, like with any fungus disease, is just try to keep them not too crowded. And and the plants themselves healthy, but other than using there are some organic fungicides, like we use a product called Milstop, which is basically the potassium bicarbonate, so it's similar to baking soda. And if you start with that before you see signs of problems, and just spray it on every couple of weeks, that does seem to help slow the disease down.
Diana, good luck. We'll move to Portland and Carol. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I have a question about clematis. I've lost a couple this year and a couple in previous years where they're absolutely beautiful, and then like overnight they're just dead, which I've read up and it sounds like it's clematis wilt. So I would love to know how to prevent it or if there's any way to stop it once it starts.
There isn't a way I know to prevent clematis wilt, Carol, unless you buy resistant selection. So we, when we buy clematis at the Botanical Gardens, we look for wilt-resistant selections. And there are a number of them out there that seem to be able to fend it off fine. There's people would say things like keep the roots cool And that helps. And that may, but I think there's mixed feelings about that. But certainly mulching the plants and keeping them healthy. But if you if you search for wilt-resistant clematis, you'll find quite a good list of selections to try.
Thank you, Carol. We'll go to Sheldon on Deer Isle. Hi, Sheldon. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I have a tree on my yard on Little Deer Isle that is being attacked by something. Small limbs up to an inch in diameter are being chewed off, some very neatly, some roughly. And they're going. It's happening from 5 feet up all the way to the very tip-top of this medium-sized tree.
Our experts have an answer, and they agree. Ding, ding.
Porcupines. Yeah, sounds like porcupines.
What does one do about porcupines?
I won't say get a cat. I mean, the way to tell, Sheldon, is to try going out at night, because they're going to be out feeding at night, just to make sure. But that sounds like, is it an apple or something in the apple family, maybe?
Oh, this is a tree that has leaves shaped like oak leaves, but it doesn't have a rough bark, just smooth bark. I'm not sure what tree it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think the porcupines are just they're around, and other than dispatching them, which I know some people do, they're obviously not something you want to get in a have a heart trap. So, I don't think we can be too much help with that one.
No, they just are. But they do tend to move on. Mm-hmm. So
we'll just hope they move on quickly. Sheldon, thanks for your call. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
And this is Maine Public Radio. Our number is 1-800-866-1475, and that's where you can share your philanthropy with Maine Public Radio, and we need your support today more than ever. Today is Super Thursday, our one-day drive, where we try to do all the business we need to do this quarter in one day. And I'm here with Brenda Garand on our board. Brenda, thank you for joining us for the past 2 hours.
Oh, gosh, it's been my pleasure.
It's
thank
always
you.
A pleasure to chat with you and to share with our listeners why we both support public broadcasting in Maine.
Absolutely. I was just wondering how many folks were outdoors working in their garden and listening to public radio as their companion.
Absolutely.
You know, that's one of the greatest things about public radio is that I don't know about what you like to do in your spare time, but I'm a big old knitter, and I love nothing more than listening to public radio, whether it's the opera on Saturday afternoon on Maine Classical, or whether it's listening to my favorite shows in the morning on Saturday as well. 800-866-1475. It's so wonderful to be able to have as the voice of kind of the background of my life and giving me just that wonderful connection to my community and to the things that I'm interested in and teaching me things I didn't even know I was interested in. How many books this summer have you learned about, either from Jen's program on Maine Calling that you've gotten into and enjoyed as part of your, you know, summer hammock experience?
Well, unfortunately, my list is longer than what I've been able to get to,
this
which is
truth.
Probably a good thing. But
yeah,
we're sharing a story offline, and I'm in my driveway listening to Terry Gross, who had an author on, and I hadn't heard the name of the book. And all of a sudden, I get a text from my wife, who is
looking
maybe
out the dining room
100
window.
Feet away, saying, "You can turn it on your app, Maine Public app, and come in the house and join us for dinner." And join the kids, but that is what we've come to rely on is our news, our journalism, our classical music, all of the wonderful books that I've read this summer
totally.
Because of people like Terry, and they have the amazing authors. Where else if not public radio?
Well, there's a certain illuminating feature that you get when you become a public radio devotee, and I'm not telling our listeners
That's
anything
right.
they don't already know.
They know
but
that.
You know, we were talking about this earlier. There's something really special about what happens when you listen to radio, when the information engages with you through that sense, all of a sudden you're using your imagination to yep. visualize what you're seeing, and it becomes a very intimate and very enveloping experience, and I don't think there's anything else like it.
Very intellectual experience.
Can also just be very, very moving experience. I mean, think about the wonderful Music That Moves Me program, so many wonderful times in public radio that really transport you from the here and now and the temporal of the bad news and all the things that we don't like to hear about to sometimes the moment that makes you say, yep, that's what it means to be alive and what it means to be in Maine. The number is 800-866-1475. The online address is mainepublic.org, another great way to become a member. Why don't you go to the telephone? You know, Scott, we're trying really hard and we're making good progress.
Great progress.
We've done a lot toward our goal of getting halfway to our 200,000 goal by 2 o'clock. And I know for sure that if every person that was listening and enjoying and thinking about becoming a member of public radio went to the telephone or to the website right now, I know we would be able to exceed that goal very quickly.
Absolutely. We have how can people give? What can people give? Well, folks can join our Evergreen Friends, monthly donors. They can make $10 gifts, $20 gifts. Or since I'm the chief development officer, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask for those larger gifts. Maybe folks out there can give $100 a month, Brenda. And what a great way to support public broadcasting in Maine. And not only for the intrinsic value that we all receive when we give, because we all feel much more of like a partner, like a founding partner of public radio in Maine when we share our own support. But there are folks out there that listen and watch that can't support public broadcasting.
Right.
And we want to be there for them, too.
Well, you know, it's a little bit about enlightened self-interest. You know, this is a perfect win-win. Support something you care about and get back something you love.
Absolutely.
And it makes it so great to be able to say out loud to the board, to members of the community, to our legislators and regulators, everybody, to say this is a well-supported and well-loved service. 800-866-1475 as we join Jennifer Brooks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott and Brenda. This is Maine Calling. Today on the program, Gardening Questions, with me, Bill Kalina, Executive Director of Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, and Barbara Murphy, Coordinator for Gardeners Growing Healthy Communities. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Penobscot and Lawton. Hi, Lawton. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm a small farmer in North Penobscot. I really appreciate your guys' show today.
Oh, thank you.
I used bumblebees this year on my blueberry field because they were supposed to be, and I think they are, they can operate at a little lower temperatures, maybe at 50 or something like that instead of 55 like a regular honeybee. But I got them from Michigan, and I think they were a bit stressed by the time they got here on their airplane flight. And because of the weather, I think everybody's, the late pollination and not enough rain down east has affected everybody's crop. But I was wondering if your guests know anybody that's doing anything with native bumblebees. I'd be interested in trying to get some native ones. And the other thing was, I had really bad last year because of the drought we had. I had really bad beetles, not only Japanese but these black ones. So this year in my squash plants, early, I ended up picking off the blossoms and drowning them because at night that's where the beetles seem to collect is in the flowers, which was kind of a pain. But so now I've got I planted giant delicatas, and they're about the size of a walnut now, so maybe I'll have an average size delicata.
Probably. Native bumblebees. I don't know anyone. And my part of the answer, and Bill can be the second part, is I would call the University of Maine. They have an incredible bee research department happening there. And if anybody knew where native bees could be found, they would be a good resource.
UMaine or UMaine Cooperative Extension?
UMaine Orono.
UMaine Orono. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot you can do also to encourage the native bumblebees. They're ground nesting versus the whole hive basically dies off in the winter and just the queen survive. But there's things that we're doing as far as providing alternative nectar sources for them during the summertime with flowering annuals, something to encourage the native bumblebee hives to just take residence of. We have just so many bumblebees now.
Okay, great. Thank you, Lawton, for your call. We're going to go to Becky in Ellsworth. Hi, Becky. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I'm calling in response to the gentleman that called in about the porcupine damage. I have been plagued with porcupines for years on my fruit trees, and the thing that I found that really works is to get about like a 4-foot length of 2-foot aluminum lashing, and I make a loose circle around the trunk of the tree, and I actually attach it to, put stakes around the tree, and I attach it to that rather than the bark of the tree, and they cannot climb up that to get to your tree, and that's the only thing that I found that has worked.
Oh, Becky, really, thanks so much. We are all coming together to solve this problem. Barbara's nodding.
Yes,
that
smart.
Sounds like,
yeah,
a good idea. Good. That mm-hmm. sounds like a good one. Well, thank you for calling and contributing that idea, Becky. I appreciate it. We're going to go. Let's see. We have a... If I can do my screen right, here we go. Facebook question from Brent. How do I find out which wild plants in my garden are weeds and which are beneficial?
Well, there's a great, you have to figure out how to sort of key them out. You know, there are some websites that, you know, focus on weeds, and but there's a website called Go Botany, just Go Botany if you look for that. And it's got a sort of a very easy key that uses the leaf shapes and things like that. So you can basically identify which weeds you have. Certainly people bring in plants to us all the time at the botanical gardens, or, you know, to extension or something to identify. But a little search on the web and you can usually figure them out pretty.
There's also a good book, Weeds of the Northeast, which has fabulous photos of weeds at various stages. So
okay. And isn't a weed just a plant somebody doesn't want?
Plant in the wrong place. Yeah,
yeah, I guess so.
We'll go to Emily calling from North Yarmouth. Hi, Emily. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was calling about squash bugs, and I missed what the last caller who was asking about squash said because I was talking to a receptionist, but I'm just struggling with the squash bugs right now, and I've tried
Barbara,
making a concoction.
Yeah.
Oh, squash bugs.
What do you recommend?
Yuck. Well, the previous caller takes the blossoms off and drowns the adults that tend to spend the night in them. So I try to get as many adults as I can, but focus on the eggs. Focus on the underside of the leaves where the eggs accumulate, where the veins intersect, and just keep rubbing your thumbs on and smushing them. You'll get many more that way than by trying to do the individual adult bit.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Emily. And this is not what you use your dustbuster for.
Oh, I have been known. Actually, the electronic racket on that one.
The electronic racket.
The bug zapping rackets, you know.
From Rennie's?
Or Ocean State Job Lots also do a good job. She's rolling her eyeballs at
no,
me.
No, I'm laughing because these are the tips. You guys, we are almost out of time. I really appreciate you coming back. One thing we've talked about during the break, next time we have you on the program, we're going to talk about seed collecting, seed saving. And I'd also like to talk more about gardening with native plants. So Barbara and Bill, since we're out of time this time, we'll have you back to talk about both of those. This is Maine Calling, and Barbara Murphy is coordinator for Gardeners Growing Healthy Communities. Bill Kalina, executive director of the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens. Nikki Shields ran the board today. Ellie Sharp answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's show will be rebroadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we are going to learn all about elderberries. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.